and so we are going to get briefed on this. A big part of this will be in the Oregon State Police budget later on in the session. And to tee it up, Mr. Wilson, why don't you take it away?
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, there's a number of handouts in front of you. First of all, for just reference sake, House Bill 2101 from last session, which assisted in kicking all this off. There's a memo from me, which I'll come back to in a minute. And then there's also the presentation document that the various participants who will be at the table follow, go through, and then also a copy of the business case, which I'm not sure if they'll refer to, but it's there. I wanted to just to lay out some issues for you. As the chair said, you will have to deal at some level with this by the end of the session. It'll be one of the bigger decisions that this subcommittee faces. There's currently in the governor's budget a project that costs $665 million financed with COPs and other revenue sources. And the question is, how far, where does that have to go? What has to be done this biennium and the whatnot? And to help you with that, I've put a memo out with a number of issues. This memo has been recycled a number of times through various various venues, and some of you may have seen parts of it before, but I really want to have you turn to the third page, where I have a series of what I think are questions that I want you to keep in the back of your head as you hear the presentation today while others talk to you, and this is not an exhausted list of questions. It would be on the third page of that. The first one is, what should be the timeline for implementing this project given the federal deadlines and associated penalties? The conditions of the current wireless system of state agencies, which I'm sure the speakers will get into, and the availability or knowledge of what the funding sources will be in the long run. Two, or B, are there components of the current system that must be done as soon as possible, and are there others that can wait? Can the project be designed in a way to spread out its implementation? C, how should the project proceed given the uncertainty of federal funding levels? Right now, the budget assumes that the state finances the entire cost of the project, financed through certificates of participation or COPs. But there are potentially other funding sources out there, including federal funding sources. D, how should the project implementation proceed given the uncertainty over the level of local participation, both in financing and sharing of sites and resources? Along the same lines, how should the project be designed or implemented to encourage and maximize the local participation? E, how should the project design implementation be carried out to ensure that whatever changing technologies are, because this is a multi-year project, and technologies, let's just say there are two things that are certain, things will change, and we will be paying taxes to finance this. So how can the project be designed to make sure that any changing technologies are included where they are appropriate and what is appropriate to include? F, what is the proper balance between the amounts of state area that is covered by the new system and the cost of the project? Because there is at some point in time probably a diminishing marginal return on the investment as you include another area of the state in that. I think they'll discuss that. There are assumptions in the project that I believe it's 85%. I could be off on that. I'm not sure, but I'm sure the speakers will get into that. G, what is a proper model for governance on this project? And the speakers will get into that, but the alternatives include a separate state agency, as proposed by the governor. There is a bill, I believe it is on the Senate side, I could be wrong in that, that sets up a state separate state agency. It could be a joint state, local, federal effort with participation in the governance by all three levels, or two levels, or one level, depending it is. There's a public utility model that at least one other state has looked at, and you could contract all or major portions of the system out to the private sector. H, the current project rollout schedule calls for starting in eastern and central Oregon. And are there other areas that need to be served first? I know there is one committee at least, that believes the coastal area, or at least members of that committee believe the coastal area should be first. So there is that ongoing debate. What are the ongoing operational and maintenance costs of systems after it's developed or even during its development, and how are those to be financed and administered, both in terms of state agency participation and if there are local agencies participating, how should that be financing model be set up for operations and maintenance? On the last page, what should the legislature finance by the end of this legislative session, given the number of uncertainties that will be remaining on the table? I don't think you will know exactly what the federal participation may be, what the individual local participation will be by the end of this session. So that needs to be considered. And then what are the roles of the interim information management committees? It's information, not information, excuse me, my spelling. The emergency board, or potentially even the 2008 legislature in this process. And finally, what action should the legislature take to ensure that there are proper incentives in place to encourage the local and federal participation in the project? You want to make sure that you encourage a participation, and that not necessarily as you protect the state's interest, that the state ends up paying for everything where the locals or the feds can participate also. So those are the questions, and there are, I'm sure, more to keep in the back of your head as you hear this presentation today, as others come forward to talk to you, and future discussions in this subcommittee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Based on those questions, are we going to form a special committee that meets 5 days a week to answer all those questions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, that just shows the complexity of this project and the challenges that you are in front of. Now, the chair has talked about setting up a work group around this subject in particular, and he may want to address that.
Are you signing up, Representative? we did meet about, 2 weeks ago, Senator Nelson, who has expressed some interest in this area, as well as Representative Riley and Mr. Wilson, to just try to get a game plan. And one of the things that we felt we needed to do first was to have the entire committee hear all of the issues and concerns. And I know that some of you may have heard this in other committees, but I think it's important that we as a group begin to wrestle with this. So that being said, Mr. O'Leary, would you please come forward?
Thank you, Chair Shields, members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Joe O'Leary, Senior Policy Advisor to Governor Kulongoski for Public Safety Issues. Mr. Chair, if it would be all right with you, I'd love to ask Mr. Ball and Chief Johnson to come up and join me at the table. We've got a multi-faceted presentation. We're kind of interdependent on each other.
Yes, please.
And I will lead off. Thank you first for this opportunity to come and talk to you about the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network. Your staff, Mr. Wilson, did an excellent job summarizing some of the many questions and challenges that lie before us. And just for the sake of context, I want to go to about a 100,000-foot level and just give you the higher. I can go higher if you want. I can definitely go higher. Going lower is where I get in trouble. and just give you a high-level policy, very high-level policy overview and justification for interoperability, public safety interoperability. What we are talking about in the most basic form is the ability of public safety agencies, first responders, people in the field, to communicate with other responders, other public safety professionals from different agencies. The fact is that today, and this is a startling fact, but the fact is that today, in most of the state, that cannot occur. First responders and public safety professionals in one agency cannot speak to public safety professionals in different agencies. public safety professionals in other parts of the state who are called to assist in events and emergencies in different parts of the state outside their home territories cannot even communicate with anyone. This is not a widespread, well-known fact in the public. It's one of the many obstacles that we face and we must overcome, but it is a reality, and interoperability is about breaking down those barriers for the greater public safety benefit of all Oregonians. I want to give you a few numbers that put some context and flesh on the gravity of this issue. 3.4 million, that is the number of residents in the state of Oregon. 559,228. That's the number of school-aged children who travel every day to and from school. 58. That is the number of truck-at-fault crashes per month in Oregon. 268,600. That's the average number of incidents that Oregon firefighters and emergency medical providers respond to each year. That translates into 79 per 1,000. 450,000. That is the number of criminal offenses reported in Oregon in 2005. 448. That's the number of traffic fatalities in Oregon in 2005. And I note that 177 of those 488 were alcohol related. The last figure I'm going to give you is 20,000. 20,000, that is the number, the estimated number of public safety first responders in Oregon. That number, that 20,000 figure, does not include volunteer public safety first responders, such as search and rescue volunteers and wildland fire volunteers. I note and I appreciate you giving me the time to put those out there on the table, but it is really important to have the context of what we were talking about, and those numbers begin to put the puzzle together for why interoperability is so vitally important. What we have at a state level is four state agencies that have radio systems. They're the Department of Transportation, the Department of Corrections, the Forestry Department, and the Oregon State Police. Of those four, three of those systems are dangerously in jeopardy of failure. They are older than most of the people who work on them. The spare parts for these systems no longer exist. Your state employees need to find parts where they can on eBay, for example. None of those four state agencies' radio systems can talk to each other right now. What the legislature did in 2005 was to pass House Bill 2101 that said, instead of rebuilding four state systems that can't talk to each other, we should build one unified public safety state system. And in that bill, in House Bill 2101, you also said, we should make it available to local, tribal, and federal public safety entities so that we have interoperable communications. You have House Bill 2101 in front of you, and I'm going to quote a very important part of this bill. It says, it is the policy of the state of Oregon to develop, finance, maintain, and operate a single emergency response wireless communications infrastructure that supports both the communication needs of all state agencies and ensures communications interoperability among all state, local, tribal, and federal public safety agencies, thereby maximizing the shared use of this invaluable public asset. In addition to the mandate of House Bill 2101, we have the federal mandate from from the Federal Communications Commission that by January of 2013, all public safety users, radio users, migrate to narrow banding system. So we have a convergence of mandates. We have a public safety near crisis, and we have, as staff has pointed out, a lot of questions that still need to be answered, and we have a lot of hurdles and mountains to climb. I'm going to turn the part of the presentation now over to some of the people that have been working on this very diligently, and I just want to conclude my portion by saying that on behalf of the governor, I look forward to working through all of these issues and these questions with you collaboratively, because the public safety of all Oregonians demand that we work together and reach solutions for this important issue. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Lindsey Ball, who is going to talk to you about the administrative oversight that the governor has directed of him to get our arms and help us get our arms around this big project.
Mr. O'Leary. Ball.
Chair Shields, members of the committee, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. Last June, I was contacted by Governor Kulongoski, and I was asked to be the overseer of the administration of the Owen Project. One of the responsibilities in that position, it was to examine the organizational structure of staffing for the project, and that's when we immediately identified that we hadn't appointed a program manager to that project. And Mike Zanin, who is in the audience, who will come up to testify in just a moment, was recruited and through a recruitment process and was appointed as a project manager. At that time, I tasked Mr. Zanin with looking at the contract we had with Federal Engineering to evaluate the efficacy of the statement of work that they were to perform, and he did so in a very diligent way, and we started getting numbers and facts from Federal Engineering as per their contract. I think some of you may have heard a number of $905 million at one time through the oversight from my office and the work of Mike Zanin. Being more specific with what was needed for the state of Oregon, that number was reduced to $665 million, which is the number that we've been working on as a conceptual design of the Owen system for the state of Oregon currently. So in addition to that type of work that I provide to the project, we've established strict fiscal integrity by working with the Budget Management Office of the Department of Administrative Services, the Legislative Fiscal Analyst, principally Mr. Doug Wilson, who is your staff on this committee. Quality assurance, internal auditing, and installing project management controls is necessary. Measure of performance of implementation, we'll adhere to timelines, establishing regimen for agreements signed with local governments, federal partners, and tribal governments. In addition, ensure that there is no loss of service coverage to our public safety servants, and there is enhanced coordination with communication. And lastly, provide sufficient administrative support to state, local, and federal governments, allowing flexibility with respect to policies to allow a seamless implementation of agreements and contracts. Now, the last thing that we're currently working on, when we received the conceptual number of $665 million from Federal Engineering, was that I asked that we conduct an analysis of that number so we can break that down into certain components throughout the state so we can really start to get a feel for what $665 million is really going to be buying us. What type of service will we be getting from it? What type of the coverage? The partnerships that are out there with some of our local governments, federal partners, and tribal governments. We're currently going through a recruitment process to employ an analyst to start breaking that down. And I think what you'll see eventually once we do that analytical work is you will get a better handle on what the cost is associated with a component like from Portland to Eugene in the I-5 corridor what the state cost is associated with putting in a backbone for Owen, and what some of the agreements in, that we can reach with local governments that will leverage more money. There are also opportunities as we work through this to look for leveraging federal dollars on a 75-25 split that we'll research and pursue as well. And I feel that in time we can give you a product that will allow you to realize what it is you'll be investing this money in. Now, our plan, and I hope that everyone pays special note to this, we're not asking for $665 million. I don't think you'll see that come during this Ways and Means process. What I think you'll see from us is a request for money to continue our planning phase, because there's still a lot more work that needs to be done on the front end of planning so people can recognize and understand what it is they'll be buying. So that's probably what you will see in the final request that covers the budget for the Owen project in the near term. We would hope that we can come back in the 08 session in February and give you more detailed planning that will allow you the comfort and the confidence that you can put the money on the table for us to start implementing the project. But there needs to be more planning done prior to us putting dollars on the ground and commencing construction. With that, I respond to any questions that you might have at this time.
Representative Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have one question about the timing and needing time to plan the project well. Because this is the sort of project that one of the goals is collaboration, and actually one of the fiscal financial opportunities is collaboration, to the extent that you can leverage and share projects that would be happening anyway at the federal or at local levels. As there is, as time progresses, whether it's 6 months or 2 years or 4 years, how many of those opportunities do we lose because some local agency or some federal department or one of our own state systems starts it to literally fail and they decide they have to go out individually and build or replace their own system, so then they don't want to collaborate with this shared project anymore? Are we at risk of losing some of those opportunities yet?
Share Shields, Representative Nathanson, the short answer is yes. If you'd like some more explanation, I can provide you with some.
Perhaps it will come out later in the presentation. I'd like to be sure that we understand it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, folks, for doing all this hard work. This is a very complicated issue, I think, as Representative Cameron pointed out. This is we listened to this testimony, most of the interim, in the Technology Committee, in both House and Senate members. And there was a lot of concern and angst about how things were going, and I think you folks are working hard to try and answer some of those questions. When I look through the statute, 2107, it's not really a very well-worded statute. It says they'll develop a single emergency response wireless communication, but my understanding is that there was going to be a wireless component, and then there's going to be maybe a radio component. I guess they're all wireless of some sort, but there's two different types of things going on. So we're not going to have a single system. And it just says, the other thing is that public safety agencies, and how do we define public safety agencies? How broad is that? Is it just these four state agencies? I think it's probably more than that. There's hospitals, emergency services, EMTs, local police folks, all those people are involved, as you indicated. There's 20,000 people involved in this. And it also seems to me that a lot of these local agencies already have interoperability. I mean, I think Eugene and some of those places, Corvallis, they're all talking about, I mean, they respond to emergencies. In my part of the country, those folks are getting together and doing things. I mean, they talk to each other. Emergencies are handled. There's interoperability, maybe not to the level it should be, but there are already systems out there. So how do you build on those systems? And I don't see that this plan has incorporated that at this point. I mean, you say we're at a crisis stage. Well, don't know, seems like when I rode around with the state police, they were using cell phones. That was the best way they were doing it. They didn't even want to get on the system. I understand that maybe that's bad. But there's ways to get around this thing. And the governor, since here, I think as somebody brought up, maybe it was Doug that talked about that, what are we trying to govern in this thing? Who are we governing? How are we going to resolve all this? You know, how are we going to mesh everything together? And it seems like we're just rushing to judgment on this thing. And the committees during the interim had a huge amount of concern about this. That if we were just going to serve these four state agencies, we were missing the whole point. And so I guess my question to you guys is, how are you going to tie this together with the local communities, who a lot of them already have interoperability systems in place and are already answering crisis calls? And they're not the big crisis, but they're, you know, they're everyday crises. So that's just kind of my two bits on this thing, that we have some really major concerns here.
So are those rhetorical questions, or would you like to
If anybody wants to just say, okay, Nelson, you're absolutely crazy, or you don't know what you're talking about, that's fine. I can deal with that.
Well, no, Joe would never say it quite like that.
Well, we got to have some honesty in this
Mr.
system.
Baller, Mr. O'Leary.
Chair Shields, Senator Nelson, your comment about there being coordination at the local level, there is a good amount of coordination at the local level between those agencies. That's very true, but that's at that local level. If there is a serious disaster where there is need for assistance through what is commonly referred to as a mutual aid, respective of several public safety entities, and they are challenged by traveling someplace to render assistance, similar to what has been commonly used as an example is the Katrina incident in Louisiana. They find that once they get there to where they need to render assistance and aid, they have no communication capability. So that was one of the problems that exists with the current system that we have. In addition to that, if you go from one jurisdiction to the next, one county to the next, or two counties away, or whatever, with public safety, oftentimes you find that you can't communicate with your fellow police officer or firefighter. That has been a common problem with our wildland fire situations in Oregon, where we send fire crews from Western Oregon to Central and Eastern Oregon. There is difficulty in the communication linkage at that time between those different fire services. That's the type of thing that we're trying to resolve, so we have that seamless communication effort between the different branches of public safety as they move about the state. Now, you made a comment of crisis mode. Well, you know, a crisis doesn't exist until it happens. And are things working today in our communication system? Yes. But if you forecast a little bit and look at the aging infrastructure that the state has with its communication system, as Mr. O'Leary pointed out, we're buying parts for radios off of eBay. They're not manufactured anymore, so we buy the spare parts. The buildings and the sites on the mountaintops or higher elevations where you find the radio communication nest, they're 30 to 40 years old for the most part. Many of them are, not all of them, and they need to be replaced. You have a federal mandate that will cost somewhere between $125 to $150 million to upgrade the radio system alone for the state. And do you want to put $125 to $150 million in 30 to 40 year old buildings that you're going to have to replace? Now, this almost starts to sound like a tale of woe, but I think realistically we need to evaluate where we currently are with our infrastructure system, and then through the appropriate analysis that I'm planning to do, give you a product that you can have some confidence in as to why the analysis points to a replacement and a construction need and an upgrade in the radio system. I'm pretty adamant that we need more analysis and more planning, and I think I align with you in many of those respects. And I also agree with you, Senator Nelson, that during the interim, during the GLC-IMT hearings, there was considerable challenge as to whether or not the state needed to delve into this type of an investment. And it's a good challenge. I think those questions need to be answered so that people can feel comfortable and understand them.
Let's follow up. Has the RFP been formulated yet? It hasn't been sent out to the public. You've got a study from Federal Engineering, which is a consulting group. It's not a federal agency. It's just a federal group.
Chair Shields, Senator Nelson, what we received is a monetary amount for a conceptual design of a system that would take care of the coverage, 85% coverage for the state of Oregon. Now, you can call me a doubting Thomas or a person who sharpens their pencil and becomes a little more critical, however you want to shape it up, but I'm going to ask the question. That's why I requested the analysis and employed an analyst to take a look as to whether or not Federal Engineering hit the mark at $665 million. And I want to break that thing down so that we identify specific sites that we need to replace, or can we partner with a local government so that we don't have to build a new site? We can, hang our radio in somebody else's shed just as easy as we can in ours that's already built. But we won't be able to do that kind of a detailed analysis until we sit down, identify a component, and walk through it piece by piece. And that's the type of planning I want to do next. And then I can give you a more accurate depiction of what the cost is going to truly be for the state of Oregon.
Just one more follow-up is, in the Federal Engineering's analysis, did they include the local existing systems in their recommendations?
Chair Shields, Senator Nelson, the $665 million was for the state system itself.
This was the state. Didn't include the... just to comment, what I'm kind of hearing is that the local folks are saying, well, we maybe want to piggyback, but we'd like the state to pay for it. And the state folks are saying, well, some of these local folks are going to pay for the money. They're going to bring up the money to help pay for it. And I think they're talking past each other. And now we've got the situation with the, well, I don't know what's going to happen with this forest, loss of forest funds coming from the federal government. The local folks aren't going to have any money to start pushing that stuff out. So, there was a lot of lack, not the communication, I think, between some of the existing interoperability systems that are already out there and what the state was trying to do. I think that was one of the biggest criticisms that we had in the interim committee.
Representative Nathanson. Oh, I'm sorry. You're next, Senator Burdick.
Oh, okay. Thank next. You. On your handout on page 5, you have a build-out schedule, and it's a phased build-out schedule. As I understand this phased-in build-out schedule, you start with the areas of the least population and work your way to the areas of most population. I'm just wondering what the rationale is there.
Chair Shields, Senator Burdick, I was not directly involved in the planning and the phase out process. That was done before I became the overseer of the project, and I would defer that to Chief Johnson on my left here, who is the chair of the SIEC Council, who was part of that process. If you don't mind, Chief, and Chair Shields, if that's appropriate.
Yeah, let me just make sure I understand where we're heading here. Joe presented, you presented, and then you still have a presentation to make, correct? Mm-hmm. So. Maybe that'll be answered in your presentation, if that's okay. And then maybe we can go to Representative Nathanson, and then we can. Would that be all right to jump in?
That's fine. I just want to answer the question.
Fire away.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, from what we've heard so far, the two speakers who we've heard from so far have mentioned coverage several times. In addition to coverage, I'm concerned about capacity. In the work that I did on the advisory committee to the Federal Communications Commission, for example, we heard many times and we discussed both coverage and capacity. There's a huge and growing volume of use of communications equipment and the airwaves, if you will. I personally would be concerned about people relying on individual cell phones in an emergency, because we've heard about dropped calls. We've experienced dropped calls. The point is to have to get things right the first time and every time. So I'm concerned about coverage, but also capacity and redundancy, because there are failures. What are the backups? I don't need a backup for my own personal communications equipment, but for an emergency system, which isn't just an emergency. It's everything, as you pointed out, going on every day, all these tens of thousands of incidents that are responded to. What is the redundancy in case there's a failure in a piece of equipment? You have mentioned that we're already obligated to spend well over $100 million to address a federal requirement. We have to make a conversion, so that would already be over $100 million. And you've also mentioned that we've got three or four systems that have aged so far. If this weren't being planned, I assume you would be bringing to us separate individual projects. What would be the cost of those separate individual projects to proceed, plus this other federal obligation? Are we already almost to the point where it shows that it's even saving money or financially prudent that we would to do this sort of project? Do you really get more than the sum of its parts? Did that make sense?
Chair Shields, Representative Nathanson, there were several questions, I think. Let's respond to the cost associated with the current system that is pretty much aged out, its life expectancy. I don't have a figure off the top of my head, but I can explain it this way. We can either replace four systems in the state of Oregon at a cost of four times what it would be if you replaced one, roughly. So I feel very comfortable that if you consolidated and replaced four systems with one, you'd be paying for one system rather than four systems. Logic and common sense tells me it's going to be cheaper. I just don't have the figures off the top of my head to give that to you. Now, you also commented a little bit on redundancy and whether or not a cell phone works. Cell phones work to a degree. They are what they are. They weren't designed in an emergency response attitude of communications. I also think that if we want to start talking about privatizing public safety in the state of Oregon, that gets us into a completely different policy position that begs the question, are we going to relinquish a constitutional mandate that we privatize public safety services in the state of Oregon? I think that's a good question to be asked, and I think it's one that should be asked early on, because if we want to take that step, then we need to do a little soul searching with respect to how we treat public safety in the state of Oregon with our citizens.
I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair to get us going, make sure we have enough time for Mr. Zanin particularly, which I think will be a significant part of the presentation, right? And a lot of these questions I think will be answered. So, Mr. Johnson, if you could please.
Thank you, Chair Shields. My name is Jeff Johnson. I'm the fire chief of Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. We serve about 400,000+ people, 9 cities and portions of 3 counties in the metropolitan area. I am the only chair that the statewide interoperability executive council has had since its formation by executive order in 2002. The SIEC, I want to just give you a brief history on that. The SIEC is comprised of 18 members. Half of those are local government representatives, public safety responders, League of Oregon Cities, special districts, etc., and half from the state of Oregon, tribal representation, etc. That SIEC has set policy for about how we're going to create interoperability in Oregon. I want to start out a little bit with kind of our initial work. You know, we wanted to pick the low-hanging fruit for interoperability. Not everything costs a lot of money. So if we could find solutions that enabled police officers and firefighters to talk to each other today, simple things like swapping cell phone numbers and adopting radio templates that recognized each other's like radio systems in a like area, then we wanted to facilitate those kinds of things. But also part of our charge was to take a look at how we create one system for interoperability in Oregon and essentially show Oregon's public response community what the top of the puzzle box looked like. I think it's been accurately reflected in here today about the local systems that are operated. And what, you know, in my world, what that means is you have a bunch of people with radio parts, radio systems, that end up like clusters of puzzle pieces stuck together, but no one really knows what the puzzle looks like when you're done. And if you don't know what the puzzle looks like when you're done, you can't stick them together in a meaningful fashion. So Oregon is comprised of this hodgepodge of dissimilar radio systems that work as far as the radio signal will propagate, and then they stop. And I think because most of us have a cell phone that I buy in Beaverton and works in Medford and it works in Vail, we assume that that's true for public safety responders. It's not. Your signal stops when you leave your first response area, and I can buy a cell phone for a couple $100 and a handheld that clips on my hip for a responder's $2,500 to $4,000. A lot of that cost, frankly, lays at the feet of waste in that there isn't a cogent plan of how people are going to communicate and what system they can plug in overhead, and that was one of the charges of the SIEC. So we embraced that. We knew that essentially there's four parts that we're really talking about here today. One part is operability, and that's that we have three systems in tremendous disrepair, and need to be replaced, and that's the operability part. Second component of that is this federal narrowbanding requirement that says if you have this wide band signal that moves through the air, that you must narrow that up by 2013, and that's a separate and distinct cost that we're dealing with. A third and distinct cost, I think as Senator Nelson pointed out, is the haulback component. You know, once the wireless signal moves from my fire engine to the tower on the top of the mountain, how do I move that through Oregon? What system do I use to move that around in the state of Oregon? It's all integral, but it really is a separate discussion point. And lastly is the interoperability component. And that's the part that we talk about the most, but it really is a choice. And I'm going to talk about interoperability as a choice. We believed when we designed and saw a vision for the future that the future in interoperable communications in Oregon and communications in Oregon would be one where there's more cooperation than we've seen in my 28-year career. We just don't believe that the duplication of systems is a logical place to go given the cost of radio technology and communications. We think with less duplication and more coordination, we can also embrace the opportunity for responders to talk to one another cross-discipline. You know, today, if Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue firefighters want to talk to Oregon State Police, I have the option of either not talking to them or buying at $4,000 a pop one of our radio systems and putting them in every patrol car that might wander through our area, and then we can talk on that radio system, or they can place state police radios in our fire engines. That's a very cumbersome and non-system approach to how interoperable communications ought to happen, and frankly, the per-unit cost this way is far more expensive. We believe that responders ought to be able to talk to one another because the interweaving of state, local, county, and federal responders, that interweave on a day-to-day basis is pretty extensive, even including the private response ambulance systems where they exist. The system that we're talking about today in the conceptual design has a substantial cost, and we recognize that. We recognize all of our collective interest in finding ways to lower it. I want to offer you some suggestions in the three ways that I see to lower that cost. You can reduce coverage. There's a direct relationship between how many towers we need to erect and put buildings at the base of and provide connectivity to. There's a direct relationship between the number of towers we must stack in Oregon and the cost of the system. If we reduce the percentage of Oregon that we want to provide a viable radio signal to, you can save cost. The second way to reduce cost of the system is to reduce or eliminate the connectivity component.
So by that, I mean if we say as Oregon, if we say our policy position is going to be let's build a system for Oregon and to heck with the local responders, to heck with the local police departments, to heck with the local fire departments, the road departments, etc. You know, they're on their own today. Let them be on their own in the future. If we choose that policy position, we can save money. That's not going to be the recommendation that comes out of the public safety community, not because I have a cooler radio at the end of the day, but because it facilitates an improved service level to the people that pay the bill, and it results in a shorter response time of a conglomerate of resources to help serve them. And the third area you can save money is cooperation. If we take this system that we're talking about and the conceptual design and the directive to the ON staff and to the SIEC is, I want you to find ways to partner with people that have towers today, public and private. Find a way to partner. Then we can take this conceptual design cost and we can substantially lower it. And I think it's appropriate to challenge us to try to quantify that in a meaningful way. Some of that we can't quantify with the existing staff we have, and that's a discussion we're going to have with you throughout this session. But there are ways to quantify it. There's examples we can provide you today. But those are the three essential ways I think we can save money. It's my, I guess it's my pleasure to bring to you a first in my career in Oregon, 28 years, and that's that we have a broad range of public safety associations saying this is a good idea. And I think they're saying this not that this is a good idea not because it benefits them, but because it benefits the people that we were jointly paid to serve. You have the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police that have endorsed it, the Oregon Sheriff's Association, the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, the APCO folks, which are the folks that represent the 911 centers and their systems. You have the League of Oregon Cities, and you have the Association of Oregon Counties that have created a task force to consider it, and that they will do within the next 30 days. It's been the first time in my professional career when those associations have come together and said, this is a vision we can get behind. I think, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to entertain any questions you have, but I know following on my heels, Mr. Chair, is Mike Zanin, the program manager, who has a broader technical expertise that may be of interest to you than the three of us.
Could I exercise some prerogative here? Did Senator Burdick get her question answered?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Burdick. Let me take a run at that. Why start in rural Oregon? I think the first reason is that when you're standing up a system like this, you're best to stand that up in the least complex area possible so that as you can work through not only the governance issues but the template issues and the technical issues, you can do so in an environment that isn't profoundly demanding from a radio traffic and a technical complexity perspective. That's the first reason. The second reason is that the metropolitan area which I serve in, we already have a pretty high degree of interoperability with the existing system. Our system does not have operability issues, so you have operability and interoperability, so there's less urgency. And then I'll offer you a personal opinion about why I think the SIEC felt strongly about this. There's many of us that have our roots in rural Oregon. I spent 30 years in Roseburg. And I think there's a general feeling that oftentimes projects are started in the metropolitan areas and then we lose our policy will to carry that out throughout the rest of the state. And I think there was at least some sense that we wanted to do it in reverse this time.
Thank you. Are these questions burning, or do you think they might be answered by Mr. Zanin?
Mine was just kind of a follow-up to that.
Okay. Let's try to make them quick.
So in response to that, I don't understand why you wouldn't start on the coast, which is probably our highest emergency area first, because you have the rural component, plus you don't have the high traffic component, plus you have, you know, this is probably our most likely emergency area.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, we are wide open to that suggestion. We were recently asked that, and I think the collective wisdom is, yeah, we're wide open to starting there.
Mr. Chair, if I could just, this is Joe O'Leary for the record, just add to that in response to both Senator Brown and Senator Burdick and for the rest of the subcommittee, this is not locked in this phasing way. This was just the way that the engineers who created the conceptual design spec'd it out, and this is absolutely subject to further discussion and input from all of us. We need to look at this critically and determine which way is best to proceed.
Thank you. Quick question.
Real quick.
Camera.
Afternoon meeting, I fell asleep, but my ears perked up. Three ways to reduce costs. One was less area covered. Two's the one I'm missing. Three was the cooperation. What was two? Summary.
Representative Cameron. Connectivity. So if we didn't allow the local responders to operate in emergent conditions on this system, we can reduce the cost.
Thank you, gentlemen. If you could stay close in case we have other questions we want to ask,
thank you.
Sure, we appreciate it. And we will bring up the project director, Mike Zanin, who will provide some technical and budget information.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Zanin. I'm the with the Oregon State Police. I'm the program director for the Owen program. I want, if I could draw your attention to page 3 on the handout. I'm not going to cover every bullet point, but I guess as I start to talk about the technical overview, what I wanted to tell you is what I'm going to be reporting on today, both in the technical part and the finance, are the recommendations that were made to us by our consultant that we hired. It's already been mentioned we hired Federal Engineering, and I need to say just a word about that just for context. When House Bill 2101 was passed, we literally didn't know how big this bread box was, and so we got some federal grant funding, and we went out for a competitive recruitment or competitive bid for companies that come in and do this thing to give us a high-level conceptual design, some recommendations, business case, cost estimate. And Federal Engineering was selected through a multi-agency, multi-governmental review of all of the bidders. They're a top-shelf engineering firm located in Alexandria, Virginia. The point I guess I'd like to make, too, is they're precluded from bidding on the actual design-build portion of this project. What we wanted to try to do was to maintain some integrity in their work. So they're not incented in any kind of way to either give us a big number or a small number or anything, because they're not necessarily going to be involved in the detailed design construction. I think that's an important point to note. So as we get into the high-level conceptual design, the technology piece of it, what Federal Engineering has come back with as their recommendation is a land mobile radio system. It's called LMR, and it involves, a microwave system to back all the signals from the mountaintops. It involves standards-based radios. Project 25 is the only federal standard for over-the-air radio communications, and that allows, by going with Project 25 radios, it allows compatibility amongst radios from different manufacturers. That's important. That was one of our requirements. One of the questions that was asked here earlier was about redundancy. The microwave design is a looped design to be able to provide functionality in case one of those links in the loop were broken. That information could be rerouted back to a dispatch center through one of the loops. One of the reasons that the cost was taken up so high was because of what they called a hybrid design. We had to use two different frequency bands because our consultant came in and they said, we don't think there's enough frequency in one band to cover the whole state. We think you're going to need two bands. And so as they proposed that, one of the frequencies that we would have to use, the signals don't go as far when you use that frequency, and so you have to put up more towers. Now, I have to tell you, that's the conceptual design. If when we put this out to bid, a vendor can come back and say to us, listen, we think you can do it. We think you can do it a different way, and we think you can do it for a whole lot less. We're going to take a look at that. But based on the work that Federal Engineering did, when they first looked at it, they said, if we look statewide, we think we're going to have to do this different. The system that has been designed here does meet the narrow banding requirements from the FCC. It provides a statewide mobile data capability. Basically, what that is you've seen these, laptop computer terminals in fire trucks and ODOT trucks and/or police vehicles. Right now, that only happens in very specific areas around the state. This system would allow, at least at a low speed capability, statewide mobile data, so you could have that all over. It also is a scalable system. What I mean by that is there's been some questions here. Can we grow this thing over time as the capacity needs increase or as new technologies emerge? Is there ways that we can bolt this on? The answer is yes, because the conceptual design that we have in place today enables that. On page three, there's been some talk about coverage, and it seems like whenever you get talking about coverage, it's easy to get confused really quick-like, and I'm going to do my best to simplify this as best I can. Today we have four statewide systems, and on that little chart on the top of page four, you can see generally the area that is covered by those four independent statewide systems. The reason it says not applicable for the Department of Corrections is because their radio systems are pretty much site-specific for the institutions that they serve. The goal here, and this is an important point, the goal here is when we unify, build one statewide system, we want to have at least the same level of coverage that we enjoy if you were to put all four of those coverage patterns for the four state systems together. And the reason that's important is because we don't want to spend a whole bunch of money and then have an ODOT worker, a forestry worker, a state trooper key the mic and say, "Well, back on the old system, I used to be able to talk here, and now we spend all this money and I can't talk here anymore." So what we're saying as a coverage goal initially is that if you take the four independent systems, state systems that we have today and look at those coverage patterns, it doesn't mean you can talk everywhere. You could if you had four radios on you. But if you aggregate those four systems and blanket that over the state, we want to maintain that same level of coverage. And what Federal Engineering has done is they have put together a conceptual design cost estimate to do exactly that. And that comparable coverage would be about 86%, you can see at the top of the page there. The map on page four simply shows, in the green where we'd have coverage. And again, high level. They haven't done detailed design on this, but high level green shows where we'd have coverage. White would show where we wouldn't have coverage with the current placement of the towers. Now, again, we're going to put this out to bid, and we're going to make this information available to the respondents, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the respondent has to bid this system. I hope that's clear. If we move on to page five, it gets to the phased build-out there, and the only thing we wanted to point out there is it just kind of shows the staging, phase one, phase two, phase three, as has been mentioned here. We want a statewide system. And to the extent that policymakers want us to start somewhere else or do something different, we're wide open to that consideration. As a matter of fact, I have been asked to ask Federal Engineering, our consultants, to go back and work up a cost estimate for if we did the coast, the whole coast as phase one, give us a number. What would that be? And that work is in progress right now. Page six, other technologies. There's been a lot of questions by a lot of people, good questions, about why aren't you using different technologies? I can tell you that the Owen design is consistent with what other states are doing. And while there's a lot of talk about, satellite, Wi-Fi, WiMAX, there's a lot of talk there. The bottom line is, when you look at statewide public safety communication systems, they are using an LMR approach, which is what has been proposed by our consultants as their core system. That doesn't mean you can't add on and take advantage of some of these other technologies as they emerge, but our design is very consistent with what other states are doing. We're going to continue to evaluate some of these emerging technologies. We're going to continue to see where it makes sense. And I guess the other thing I would tell you is, as people come forward and say, "Listen, we can do this a whole lot cheaper. We could, put up a satellite above Oregon and do this a whole lot cheaper." I'm being a bit facetious, but the bottom line is, I'm going to say, please bid. I mean, please, if you can do it with a different technology, when we actually put out the RFP for the design build, we're going to give vendors an opportunity to put their money where their mouth is, literally. So if you can come in and meet the functional requirements for the public safety community, and you can do that using an alternative technology, we will take a look at that. So we're not precluding anybody from that bidding. Other states, here's the challenge. There's a lot of anecdotal information about what other states have spent, are spending. But our challenge right now is there's not a single source. You would think that the federal government would have a single source of information where they would collect that and say, here's what all the other states are doing. We've been able to piecemeal some things together. And trying to find an apples-to-apples comparison with Oregon is very, very difficult. You're very familiar with our geography. It is unique as far as when you consider the Cascades, the coast, the blues, the strawberries, Wallowas, Siskiyous, Steens. Given that amount of geography, it makes it a lot more difficult, a lot more expensive. And then you have to factor in the age of our current system, as has been clearly identified here. A lot of other states are spending less because their core system, their core infrastructure, and what I mean by that, their buildings, their towers, their microwave system, has been upgraded along the way and is in pretty good shape right now. So they don't have to make those investments to move forward. They just have to make investments maybe in the radio system and the interoperability pieces. I guess the other thing to note is in March, there's a contingent of five people from within Oregon going down to Los Angeles, the National Governors Association, working with the Federal Department of Homeland Security organization that's responsible for interoperability planning nationwide. It's an outfit called SAFECOM. They're sponsoring a nationwide Y'all Come to talk about interoperability planning. There's five of us that are going to go down from Oregon. It is my hope that at that meeting we're going to be able to find out a little bit more detailed information as far as what other states are doing and what they're spending. And finally, what I'd like to say as it pertains to the technology piece, and it's been touched on here today, is the issue of partnership. What the $665 cost estimate does not reflect is the savings that we can achieve through partnership. Here's what I can tell you. Yesterday, when we put up communication sites, we went to the locals, we went to the federal government, and in many cases we went to the private sector and say, hey, we've got to upgrade this site. You guys are there. We know that you need to have this site up there too. Do you want to partner? And so where those opportunities made sense, we partnered. That was yesterday. Today, with the funding that we have, we're doing that today. I can give you some great examples of what we're doing with Columbia River Intertribal Fisheries Enforcement Group. They needed some upgraded infrastructure up the Columbia River Gorge. They got some grant funding. They're making an investment, significant investment. We're going to own and operate the system. The same thing with the Federal Department of Justice. They have a program called IWIN, which is the Integrated Wireless Network, where they came and they gave the state money to basically build upgraded infrastructure down the I-5 corridor. They give us the money, we build it, we own it, we operate it, we share the infrastructure. And we've got example after example in county locations today where we go to the county and they put up the building, we put up the tower, somebody else puts in the the power backup power supply, and everybody gets an upgraded communication system for less than they'd have to pay. We have made, we've met with the BLM, with the Forest Service, with the Coast Guard, with multiple counties, with the folks from the metro area. They're coming down again in a couple weeks to talk to us about partnering because they're telling us they have to invest somewhere on the order of $50 to $75 million in the next 3 years. And to a person, everybody is saying, when you get ready to build in my area, let's talk. We are open to partnerships. Our difficulty is quantifying that and telling you exactly how much that would save. But I can tell you that everybody we've talked to date is very, very positive and very, very willing. It is just very difficult to quantify that at this point in time. So that's the technology overview. I guess I'd stop at that point before I move into the budget and finance to see if you had any specific questions related to the technology.
Questions, committee? Representative Hand.
Mr. Vice Chair, thank you. Mike, I know you and I visited about this, and you've just kind of finished on this topic, but one of my concerns is this partnership piece, in that you're using every opportunity through broadcast network TV, through Oregon Public Broadcasting, through all the cell phone providers, As you're describing these partnerships, are all of those folks part of that partnership?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I have talked to Steve Bass from OPB about the potential of sharing infrastructure. I have not met with the providers, the cell phone providers necessarily. What I can tell you is when we put this out for bid, we're going to invite private sector to give us, you know, their recommendations, to give us their proposals. And also, we're going to put build within the RFP that preference will be given to vendors that come back to us that actually maximize the use of existing or shared infrastructure so as to minimize costs. We can build that into the RFP.
Just to follow up, Mr. Vice Chair, thank you. Mike, and I appreciate that. And as you all review the map and you look at places in rural northeastern Douglas County, you see a lot of white. It's simply because of the geography.
Mm-hmm.
But
where the owls live.
Where the owls live. It is that as well. But as you drive up and down the highway, the interstate, you see numerous towers that are radio towers, cell phone towers, broadcast towers of all shapes, types, forms, and numerous hilltops covered with those sites. I think it's incumbent upon this entire group not only to do this for the reasons that it makes good common sense to collaborate in all these locations where it makes sense, but we're also dotting the landscape with these towers everywhere. And I just can't say enough about the possibility of the partnerships, that it should be exhaustive in the amount of energy put forth. Even today, even to send them a letter today and say, look, this Owen project, when we're going to sit here and talk about spending $660 million over some time period, and likely more expensive than that as the ongoing costs get there, to bring in every single partnership out there, I just can't stress enough the need to exhaustively search for those.
Mr. Chair, if I might, Mr. Chair, Representative Hanna, I think in principle we are definitely on the same page, and we are working within the resources that we have to try to promote those kinds of partnerships. Candidly, though, the challenge is going to be this in a procurement. As you know, state procurement is a pretty rigid, structured. You got to do apples to apples comparison between the different bids, and we haven't cracked this nut yet. But I want to at least flag it as a significant policy issue. And yet we want to be creative, and we want to incent somehow or another in that rigid procurement process creative ideas, creative partnerships. But at the same time, when all is said and done, the state doesn't want to be in the position of saying you have to use this, 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 and this infrastructure because we want somebody to come in and design it and then back up that design to meet the functional requirements. And so how you dance that dance in a fairly rigid procurement process and maximize the kind of creative partnerships that you're talking about, and yet still leave on the vendors, have them fully responsible for the functionality of the system that is put in place at the end of the day. That's going to be a challenge. So in principle, we agree and we're working to that end. I'm just saying how you then translate that in a procurement process, I think, is going to be challenging.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Mike, could you clear up this concept of narrowband versus broadband for me? What I'm hearing is broadband is, that's the wave of the future, it is in the broadband, but this seems to talk about narrowband. Are we talking on the same things, or what are we talking about?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's actually a very good question. I'll do my best, and I think I'll be close. When they talk about narrowband, it's unfortunate that they're using terms that end in the word band. Narrowband actually refers to doing the same thing in the radio spectrum, but using less radio frequency spectrum to accomplish that same thing. So they want to get more juice out of the spectrum, so they want to be able to have more users use up radio spectrum in a smaller amount of that spectrum so they can sell off the rest of the spectrum to help lower the national debt. Don't mean to be facetious. when you start talking about broadband, it talks about that's a capacity for transmitting voice and data, or any kind of data, images. It actually talks about the size of the pipe and the capability of how much information can you get through that pipe. And broadband generally refers to, we got a bigger pipe and we can put a lot of voice, a lot of data, a lot of images through it. So it's similar, but it's not the same. One is dealing with radio frequency spectrum and how much of that you're using. And broadband actually refers to how much data can you put through a pipe. Does that help a little bit?
You could have a broadband pipe within a narrowband spectrum. Is that possible?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, you could, using the right technology.
Okay.
Mr. Zanna, I know that you still have some budget numbers to go over, so why don't I take the prerogative to get the train rolling, and because I know Mr. Ball wants 5 minutes towards the end.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you'll turn to page 8, I am going to go really high over this because... What we've tried to do is we've tried to break down the $665 million into its component pieces, not only by phase, but also by over the course of the next three biennia, if that's what we choose to do. Now, having said all of this, and I'm not going to go through every number here, I wanted to make sure you had this background information because there's been a lot of questions about what's involved with the cost. And so what we've tried to do on page 8 is show that breakdown over the course of the next three biennia, which pieces go where. I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail because I'm going to talk about what one of the things that Lindsey Ball has directed us to do that we're trying to get our arms around. Pages 9 and 10 actually show what we get if we follow the three-phase approach as has been recommended by our consultant. We see what we get in the 2000 in the 07-09, the 09-11, the 11-13 biennium. And then the chart on the bottom of page 10 actually shows a breakdown of how we got to the 665 by its component area. You'll recall I mentioned early on in my presentation that this was a fully loaded cost. It wasn't just the cost of hardware, wasn't just the cost of software, it was the cost of the services that the vendor provides, the design, engineering, installation, testing. It involves staff costs, it involves maintenance costs, it involves spare parts. It's a fully loaded cost, which is the other challenge we have when comparing with other states, because some numbers we get from other states is the cost of going out and buying the radios. But it doesn't involve the upgrades to the microwave system, buildings, towers, permitting, all that. This is a fully loaded cost, and that's how we got there. And then on page 11 and 12 is simply a breakdown of the various technical elements, the independent review and quality assurance, and the maintenance and staffing, and what is embedded in those various categories. So you have some background as to what federal engineering was proposing, what they were considering when they put together those costs. Having said all of that, I guess what I wanted to be able to say related to the cost was we've been working with Lindsay's office to bring on an analyst to take a look at this to see if there's different ways that we can cut this, see if there's different discrete chunks that we can do, see if there's different approaches, and what are the pros and cons of doing approach A over approach B, and we're in the process of doing that. We have done kind of an initial cut at that to say, what if we just narrowbanded? What if we just upgraded the microwave system? What if we got rid of interoperability? Those what-if scenarios, we've taken a first whack at that, but it's going to be refined as we get this analyst on board to take a look at that. So what we hope to be able to do is to come back to you with some specific options for your consideration that are options that move us in the right direction, but certainly doesn't, you know, have us asking you to write a check for $665 million right out of the gate. And so those are the kind of things that we're going to be working on. The information we provided here, though, is based on the cost numbers that the consultant has brought back to us and kind of the justification for that. And that's all I really want to say on budget and finance at this point in time, knowing that we've got additional work that's kind of in play right now.
Mr. Zanna, one of the things that I'm wrestling with is the degree of legislative involvement with what is... I assume going to be recommendation from the executive branch on what we should be doing. I feel like we should be somehow involved every step of the way so that we can feel confident spreading the word amongst our colleagues on what that recommendation might be. Have you all had any thoughts of how you would like to see the members interact with this oversight or this creation of recommendation?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, my name is Lindsay Ball. If it's okay, maybe I could respond to that question.
Please.
This comes from my past experience working with legislators. I found the closer we are with discussions and responding to questions and providing information to legislators and creating an exchange between the legislative branch and the executive branch, we get a much better product. So I like the engagement. I like that partnership of asking the question and exchanging the information. That's when I think good state policy is really delivered for the people of Oregon. So the level, make it intense if you'd like to, if you have the time and availability to accomplish that. I'll make sure that we can respond with the information you need so you can make the right decisions.
And are there semi-regular meetings that are happening on this topic right now that you might like a couple of legislative members to attend?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, we hold a meeting once a week with Joe O'Leary, myself, Chief Johnson, Mike Zanin. We also have State Forestry and Department of Transportation people present, and we discuss the policy and the direction that this is going. It is actually Joe's meeting. It was one of the things that I implemented when I became the overseer, was that we were going to start having weekly meetings, but Joe runs the meeting, and his schedule changes, so it moves around from day to day, week to week, but there is a weekly meeting, and without objection from Joe, I suspect you'd be invited to it.
Well, I was thinking about appointment, perhaps, but...
Chair Shields, Joe O'Leary, I would love to get on the record and say we'd love to have you. We at one time actually had it as a regular Wednesday morning at 8:30 meeting, and with the legislative session in full swing, that's had to give a little bit, but we're trying to get back to a set time. I don't want you to lose sight of the fact that the State Interoperability Council does have legislative membership appointed by the presiding officers of each chamber, and Representative Boquist was the officer, was the member appointed by the former speaker, and that position is now open for a member of the House of Representatives to fill. Senator Metzger is the representative from the Senate side. So there's that level of appointment to the State Interoperability Council, which set up some of the parameters for the system that we're talking about, and I would call it probably an open invitation to the members of this subcommittee to join us for our little in the weeds management meeting every week.
You know, I believe strongly in putting people to work in areas where they have an area of interest, and if that doesn't work, then I have to just assign somebody. But does anyone have a particular interest in this? I know Senator Nelson, would you be interested in being on one of these? I'd like to get perhaps one person from each chamber. And anybody on the House side want to invest some time? I don't want to put you on the spot right now, but just think about it. We can, and I also probably should talk to leadership as well about that. Senator Westland.
Just a question for Joe. I assume these are open meetings, and if other senators than Mr. Nelson, who is obviously thrilled to be there, wander in, i.e. myself, I assume that would not meet with any objections.
Senator, we'd love to have you.
Very good.
All right. Now, Mr. Bullock, you've got about 5 minutes. Do you want to take that to kind of wrap things up, or should we continue on with questions if there are any at this point? What would you prefer?
Chair Shields, members of the committee, I can wrap this up very quickly. The policy considerations are written in front of you. I'll allow you just to peruse through that at your leisure. Also, the risk assessment. I'll just remind and ask the committee two things. One is, I talked about it earlier, please ask the questions, contact us. We'll come to your individual offices, visit with you about it. Challenges, if you wish. Do the what-if question. I think that's important. We need to get that type of information and dialogue moving back and forth across the two branches. And the last policy consideration, as I mentioned earlier, I'm really focusing on funding for continuing planning so we can respond to those questions such as Representative Hannah had. Can we partner with some of the private providers? Is that within the scope of the appropriate policy of the state of Oregon? Those kinds of things, I think, need to be researched and analyzed. But I can't accomplish that with the existing staff. I need some more help to get that done in the next year prior to next February. That's the biggest policy consideration I think that's on the table. With that, I'll close and respond to any more questions that you and the committee may have, sir.
Mr. Paul, which subcommittee handles your budget?
My budget is handled by general government, chaired by Representative Jensen. The funding for Owen is in the state police budget, which is in front of this committee.
Right. Thank you. Questions? Yes,
thank you, Chair Shields. Lindsay, given that SCR1 is new to all of us, the new session planning piece, one of you mentioned the idea that this would come back as an agenda item for the February 08 session. I'm not sure exactly, given what SCR1, how that works. How do you get in the queue for that, and have you initiated whatever process it takes to get in the queue for a February 08 session conversation?
Chair Shields, Representative Hannah, we've discussed the concept of having planning money funded through this legislative session, scheduling money for approval to be released in February. The details of that concept I've discussed with Mr. Wilson on staff. He would probably be able to tell you the mechanics of it much better than what I could, but that's the concept behind it.
Follow up, Doug? Can you help us with that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hannah, I'm not sure if I know the way to queue up. We have talked about the timing, and I think it's crucial that the planning staff and whatever staff, RFP-related procurement staff and those kinds of folks need to be funded starting July 1, continued and likely expanded. Right now, the budget includes, assumes that the state pays the entire $665 million, and that you start rolling out COPs to finance it sometime during the biennium. So depending on the timing, you would have to set aside funds for paying COPs probably quite late in the biennium. And I think the direction the executive branch now is moving is saying, we're going to slow this down a little bit, do a lot more planning here in the first year of the biennium, and start. So really you're not taking a look at a very large debt service need in 07-09. What that means, though, it rolls up in the future biennium. But at least at this stage, they're trying to extend it out a little bit so the planning can be done, the partnerships be explored, and hopefully some signal from the feds that show not only participation but some federal funding, because Oregon is not unique in this at all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Zinn.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I meant to mention this during my presentation. You have another handout with you today, and I didn't even address it, and it's kind of laying there, and I feel compelled to at least tell you a little bit about what it is. The other document that was passed out was the business case that Federal Engineering developed for this system. I'm going to tell you, I think it's a good piece of work. I think it's got a lot of great background information, and it is in part a product based on Senator Nelson and his colleagues on the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology kept
encouraging us and exhorting us to, bring forth a business case. And it was part of the contract deliverable for Federal Engineering. They gave this to us about 3 weeks ago. It is a good piece of work. Wanted you to have it. Again, it has a lot of great background information, and we welcome the opportunity to come back to this committee and kind of walk through the various, high points of this, if that was of interest to you.
Great. Thank you very much. Anything else? I will close this committee. Thank you, gentlemen. You did a very nice job.